Welcome to Eat, Sleep, Wine, Repeat, a podcast for all you wine lovers who, if you're like me, just cannot get enough of the good stuff. I'm Yanina Doyle, your host, brand ambassador, wine educator, and sommelier. So stick with me as we dive deeper into this ever-evolving, wonderful world of wine. And wherever you are listening to this, cheers to you. Hello to all my lovely wine lovers. So I have a really wonderful guest on this episode who you may know already if you've watched The Three Drinkers on Amazon Prime. TV presenter and drinks writer A.D. Smith is going to be joining me, and you're going to hear a little why California has a very special place in his heart, but also how he's pushing for more equality, diversity, and happiness in the drinks industry. So hopefully after this, you're going to find yourself a few minutes of bliss and feel overcome with motivation to raise the vibrations in whatever industry you work in too. But before I welcome AD, it is time for my winery of the week. So my winery of the week is Brewer Clifton, who without a doubt are one of the top producers in Santa Rita Hills. So this is in the most western part of the bigger AVA Santa Ynez Valley. And this is within the bigger Santa Barbara County. Always good to have a look at a wine map if you can. Now I'll talk about the region in a moment, but first let's talk about this amazing winery. So the founders, Stephen Clifton and Greg Brewer, they met in 1995 and knew instantly that they wanted to start a winery together. So working hard for the first year, they managed to save $12,000, which was enough to set up Brewer Clifton in 1996, producing an inaugural 240 cases of wine. Now this was made in the Santa Barbara winery where Greg Brewer was assistant winemaker at the time. Now after working out of other wineries for several years, in 2000, they set up shop in Lompoc. Now you're going to hear me mention this area later in the podcast, so listen out. It's also known as the Wine Ghetto, and it has its own wine trail, so really well worth visiting. Now, in 2001, Robert Parker named them his single greatest revelation of his 2001 tastings. At this point, they were still sourcing grapes rather than from their own land. But in 2005, they took the plunge and established their own farming team, planting vineyards, which now totals over 24 hectares. It was in 2012 that they completed the full transition to 100% estate fruit. And it was in fact a few years later that the 2012 Santa Rita Hills Pinot Noir was ranked number 8 in the Wine Spectator's top 100 wines of the world. I'm quite excited to say I have the 2015 of this wine to taste in a moment. Now, since 2017, they've joined Jackson Family Wines. So they are a family-owned and operated winery group whose list of quality wineries is pretty impressive. By joining Jackson Family Wines, this has allowed winemaker Greg Brewer to dedicate himself entirely to the Brewer Clifton wines, as opposed to before where he was doing consultant work for many other wineries. So I can only see these wines getting better and better. Now, you definitely want to get your hands on some of this wine. Greg Brewer himself was named winemaker of the year last year by Wine Enthusiast. Now, if you're going to get some of the wines, there are many Pinots and Chardonnays to try from his 3D Vineyard, Hapgood Vineyard, and Machado Vineyard. He also has a whole range of Chardonnays called Diatom, and even one sexy little sit-out known as Ex Post Facto. Now, as I said, I have the 2015 Brewer Clifton Santa Rita Hills Pinot Noir to try. This is $58.95 from the Wine Treasury. So you are understanding now we are talking about premium wines when we talk about the portfolio of Brewer Clifton. It's worth noting the Wine Treasury is an amazing wine site to go to in the UK if you're after premium Californian wine, as that is their speciality. Now, this Pinot, 100% Pinot Noir, from the 3D and Machado vineyards. They age the wine for 12 to 18 months in neutral Sarug barrels. These are the top barrels that come from a cooperage in Nuits-Saint-Georges, Burgundy. It's all about whole cluster fermentation, and they work with the stems, which helps structure the wines and gives a bit more of an earthiness, which balances the very, very ripe Santa Rita Hills fruit. Okay, so let's try this beautiful little Pinot and see how it tastes. Oh, so on the nose, it's beautifully, beautifully aromatic. It's got a medium plus intensity, but it's like highly lifted with loads and loads of perfumed, musky notes even. Kind of dried roses and pot puree, but Lots of sweet red fruits. The red fruits are more like a pomegranate style, a bit of the fresh raspberries, but there's a lovely sweet earthiness, almost like freshly sawn wood. And actually, like a little bit of rhubarb as well. Now there's a little tiny hint of mocha. God, actually, it's an incredibly layered, complex wine. Still super pretty, but kind of a little flinty minerality to it, and even some tea leaves. Gosh, I think this is the kind of wine. I'm definitely going to come back to this once I stop recording. I think there's loads to find in this glass, and I haven't decanted this. I've just poured it now, so it's a real wonder. Gosh, it's incredibly weightless. It's a medium-bodied wine, super elegant, but yeah, it feels so light and fresh in the mouth. Loads of juicy fresh strawberries with like a real sharpness of red currants and some red cherries. So all those red fruits come through onto the palate, but there's some gorgeously soft, silky tannins and a really nice, like a chalky mineral texture. A little bit of star anise on the finish, but gorgeous, lively acidity to go with it. This is still so fresh and really, really youthful. And this is actually, it's a 2015, so 6 years old. And none of that real mushroomy, earthy character, that evolution that comes with Pinot Noir has even started. So this is a wine that you could really hold back. I would cellar it for, gosh, at least 10 years if you wanted to taste it with those tertiary aromas. It will definitely still have the concentration. Wow, I'm more impressed. This is a pricey Pinot Noir, but for what it offers, yeah, it is worth the price. Now, what makes Santa Rita Hills so special? Let's just touch on this region very quickly. So firstly, when you see written down Santa Rita Hills, you'll find the Santa part is actually spelt S-T-A and a full stop. I've heard this was actually down to a slightly dramatic story with Chilean winery Santa Rita. So this spelling change is to avoid confusion between the two. So the first vineyards of Santa Rita Hills were planted in 1971, and this incredible vineyard is known as Sanford and Benedict. So do look out for that on certain wine labels. But it wasn't actually until 2001 that Santa Rita Hills received its AVA status. Now the region is planted to its superstars Pinot Noir and then Chardonnay, but you are going to find a little bit of Syrah, Sauvignon Blanc and Viognier. Now the region is about 10 miles away from the Pacific coast, making it the most western AVA in Santa Barbara County. And because the valley runs east to west, so the mountain ranges run that direction, it acts as wind tunnels and this sucks in the freezing cold winds and loads of fog. So this means the temperatures stay cool and allows for a much longer growing season. With rain only coming in the winter really and loads of sunshine, this is a perfect grape growing area for cool climate grape varieties. Now, the soil types are actually a real patchwork of many different types. We may see some sub-AVAs in the future, but in general, they tend to be very poor, with lots of marine deposits and lots of calcium. Right, well, we will be talking through the episode about many of our favourite wine regions of California. And in fact, listen out for some of AD's best value Californian wines. So, without further ado, let's go over to the chat now. AD, thank you so much for joining me. How are you today?
Thank you for having me. I'm good. I'm looking outside. I see the sun is shining down on the ships of Tobacco Dock outside of my apartment. Looks like a good day and I'm looking forward to doing a little bit of a walk later and feeding the ducks because that is my new form of entertainment.
Oh, I love that. Okay, but remember, you've got to feed them with brown bread.
Seeds. If you're going to feed them bread, it should be brown. Yes. But they say don't do bread, don't they? Seeds or peas, defrosted peas. But the ducks don't like my defrosted peas.
Or do you want to name and shame a brand?
No, they've got bloody Waitrose. They're picky little shits, these ducks. You know, they're getting good quality peas.
They don't like their Waitrose peas. Well, it looks like you need to go and find another duck pond. Shame them. They can starve.
Walk to the other side of London. Well, do you know what? I like feeding them by hand as well. I always kind of right there, put it in my hand and see how close they come. There's always a confident ducks and then there's always a quite shy ducks. But as soon as a confident one comes up, it empowers the others to come forth. The swan doesn't care. The swan would go straight in. It's like, yep, that's mine. Everyone else get out of my way. Look at my big, beautiful, burly feathers. I'm in.
I did say to you earlier before we started recording, I feel like a bit of a swan. And now I feel like I'm even more of a swan. I go right in there and I attack. Okay, interesting.
There you go. I can try and feed you peas from my hand, but it might not have the same effect.
It could be interesting. So when we do see each other face to face, let's give it a go. And somebody can just record it and we'll just see what happens. We'll put it out on the internet. Maybe it'll go viral.
There you go. We can feed each other bits of wholemeal bread, peas and seeds. Maybe we can find the ideal wine pairing for them all as well.
Oh my God. Well, maybe we'll talk about that later. Anyway, fun times. AD, let's get on to some wine. step away from the bread. I always think, actually, it's pretty impressive, all the stuff that you've done. I know that you wanted to be an actor when you were little, right?
Yes.
Then you went and did some marketing management in uni.
That's right. Did a degree in marketing management and ended up going over to California and then lived there for a number of years before coming back over here.
And did that give you that little wine itch living in California?
Do you know what?
You're going to say no?
Wine journey was very interesting.
Ooh.
Well, yes, it did, but not in the way that you might think.
Okay.
So when I was at university, I was necking back bottles of Yellowtail. Yellowtail Shiraz Cab Blend was my favourite wine when I was 18 to 21. You know, it did its job. It got me out there on the nights.
Uh-huh.
But when I was 20 years old, I went over to California and I ended up working in an ad agency as part of my degree.
Mm.
And the journey to get over to California, to San Francisco, had taken about 60 hours. The first plane had been cancelled. There were delays. There was all this nonsense going on. And when I got off the plane, finally, after this tiresome journey, I had to go straight to a networking event because my university had done one for the first time in about 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
And they told me I could not miss it because it could be invaluable. I could meet some cool people.
Mm-hmm.
So there I am in this hotel, walking to this kind of boardroom where this event is. And it suddenly dawns on me, oh my God, I'm 20. I can't drink for another 4 months.
What am I
going to do?
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh no. So I open the doors and this chap looks right at me, walks up and goes, hi, I'm Steve. You need a drink. Grabs a glass of red wine, shoves it into me. And turns out Steve Smith, he's got the same last name as me, went to the same university, studied the same course and was in the same halls of residence 20 years prior.
No!
But even more so, he grew up 4 miles down the road from where I grew up. So we instantly hit it off. And he and his wife had the only urban garage yeast winery in Silicon Valley.
That's
and they
amazing.
Did it as a hobby.
Okay.
So I got embraced by them. And I was making wine at the age of 20 without knowing what on earth I was doing.
You were
kind of
making
volunteering with them.
Wine. Oh, fabulous. And you're saying it's an urban winery?
I was assisting.
Okay.
I was assisting making wine, yeah. I probably shouldn't go as far to say that it was my wine, but I definitely did have an impact. I stirred it a couple of times, you know, when it was in those plastic vats. I did my part.
So you were the ultimate wine stirrer they ever had, right?
Yeah, that or a cellar rat without a cellar.
Yeah, an urban cellar rat. No, I tell you what, people may or may not know who you are. If they don't, they absolutely need to. Now, the way I like to see you, I feel like now, probably very different to 20-year-old AD, you are like the James Bond of the wine world. What do you think of that? But instead of a gun, with a Coravan.
I like that.
Yeah?
I like that.
You know, you look fabulous in a suit. For anybody, please go across to AD's Instagram, @sipped. You'll see many. In fact, you're there often with a martini, possibly shaken and not stirred. I mean, who knows? You have got photos of you exactly doing
that. I've got a little story for you.
Tell me the story.
For you
Love the
well
story. Go for
this.
It.
So my soulmate, my best friend, my co-presenter, co-director, Helena Nicklin, mm-hmm. who I love and adore, she is my work wife. We have not been able to see each other for a very long time because of the different lockdowns that we've had. And at Christmas, Helena was reached out to by a particular wine brand who wanted to do some fun thing with her. And they wanted to create a cardboard cutout of her. And she said, got an idea here. Because Helena and I couldn't work together, she thought, I'm going to send AD the cardboard cutout of me and I'm going to get one of him and send it to myself so we can pretend to do videos with each other. However, it all got mixed up a little bit, and they ended up sending our own cardboard cutouts to ourselves.
Oh no! So
for the past 2 to 3 months, I've had a cardboard cutout of me holding a Coravan in the window of my apartment for everyone who walks past to see, just right there. And every time I look out, someone sees it and has a big smile on their face. Oh. And that makes me so happy.
Well, that's important, right? This muck up, and you're helping the world to smile.
And at one point at Christmas, there was a blow up sex doll next to it, but we were asked to remove that for obvious reasons.
I don't understand why they would
ask
you. I won't
go into that story.
Oh, yeah, I suppose in theory this isn't that kind of podcast. But anyway, this is how I see you, right? Beautifully dressed, great suit, Coravan in one hand, martini on the other. But you mentioned Helena. How did you start the Three Drinkers television series? Because it's pretty special. And it's not just with Helena. It's also with Colin, isn't it?
Colin, that's the one.
So the three of you, am I right? You funded and organized and then directed everything, as well as being the three in front of the camera.
Exactly, that is spot on. So, you know, I've known Helena, I've known Colin for a number of years, just throughout the journalism world in Wine and Spirits. And, you know, prior to that, I'd said with Helena, we both had in our histories, in our past, some form of TV career. Mm. Helena was an actress for years, I was a child actor, and we both really knew that we wanted to be back on screen. And it was in March 2018 that Helena, Colin and myself got together at Milroy's in Soho. Mm-hmm. And it dawned on us that at the time, there was absolutely nothing on TV that went beyond the swirling a glass and talking tasting notes education of Wine and Spirits versus the actual journey, the entertainment, the fun, the beauty, the lifestyle. And so with no one else having done it, we thought to ourselves, let's make a TV show. And, you know, one thing with myself, I was a kid. My symptoms and my tics of Tourette syndrome weren't pronounced. They were still fairly dormant. But if you take someone who has something like Tourette syndrome now and put them in a screening process, they're instantly going to get declined because someone is going to assume that they'll start swearing on camera. Mm. Now, 6% of people who have Tourette syndrome swear. It's known as coprolalia, and it's the act of doing inappropriate things. But there is so much awareness to that, which maybe we'll go into that a bit later.
No, for sure.
But the point is, we thought, let's make our own TV series. And so we got it funded, having had loads of great relationships with different wine and spirits brands, having worked in journalism for, you know, nearly 30 years collectively. Mm-hmm. And we made it happen, produced it, directed it. And it's been on Amazon Prime Part 1 and Part 2 since 2018, 2019. Part 2 came out in December.
And aired in, I think, 172 territories. Am I correct?
That's the one. And that is the one.
X amount of different languages. That figure I can't remember off the top of my head. So you could tell me, who knows. And you're going to do series 2 soon, right?
Well, we can't talk about that. I'm not allowed to talk about that. But there will be things coming. Okay. There will be things coming. But I'm not allowed to mention them just yet. Otherwise, I'll get in a lot of trouble.
Ooh, well, you know, I don't know. Getting in trouble's not so bad. But fine, I won't press. I will not press. So people need to go. Amazon, for everyone can access it on Amazon, can't they?
As long as you've got an Amazon account, you can certainly. And if this is aired before the 31st of March, then you have a couple of days left to watch it for free on our website, because as part of a little thank you to the world, we wanted to launch it for free, stream for free through our website, just to support people who might not have the financial means to have Amazon Prime right now as well.
Okay, fabulous. I don't know my dates. It may well be. We shall see. But anybody who has not seen this, it's so much fun. AD is definitely a superstar. Do you agree?
Always. Good. Always. My middle name.
Good. I mean, I just remember one of the clips of you running off, leaving behind Helena and Colin and just falling. Well, I wouldn't say flat on your face, but in my head, it was just like a big, massive fall down a hill. You're making everyone laugh constantly. I think that's fair to say.
As long as I can put a smile on people's faces, that's all that matters.
And they will learn things as well as watching you fall down. Were there any disasters, anything that went completely wrong whilst filming the first series?
I remember one scene when we were on Isla. And we were at Ardbeg, and Helena had thought, do you know what? I'm going to get this beautiful bottle of Ardbeg, and I'm going to just put it down here by this nice little rock pool with the ocean just coming in and sweeping up on the side of the shore. And I'm going to take a really nice picture of it.
I know.
So she went, she put it there. The bottle was fine. Which is people first saying, oh God, did it go off into the ocean?
Yeah.
No, it was fine. She got a beautiful picture. And then she went down to get it, and a swan had decided to protect the bottle and would not let her have it back.
Those swans.
And so she was angrily chased. Yeah. The topic of today, it was hissing, it was spitting at her. It would not let her have that bottle back, bless her. There was one night when, again, on Isla, Now, Islay's a very small island, and you know, there's not a massive population there. Therefore, there's not many places to eat. And we'd arrived quite late, and we managed to find like the last remaining restaurant, which was this cute little Indian restaurant at the furthest point of the island. And they didn't serve alcohol. So throughout the evening, we kept walking to the pub next door, getting nice large pints of glass or a dram of whiskey, then just walking across the street with the glassware, because that was their arrangement. You'd just
amazing.
Go get your drink, come back over, vice versa. They'd deliver takeout to the one next door. It was rather bizarre, but great evening, I have to say.
Nice little setup. There we go. Oh, I always like it. Little tips when people can travel again. Now they know what to expect if they can go up north into Scotland. I dream, actually. I'm thinking this summer to go on a trip to Scotland, take a van, do some wild camping. Again, hopefully that will be allowed. And also some good weather, if I cross my fingers. That's it just rains all the time when you're up in Scotland, right?
Well, you say that, but throughout the series, it's a bit of a lie, because in our series, they had a massive heat wave, and so it's sunny in nearly every single episode. But you're quite right. The weather there is absolutely dismal. So take a brolly and some wellies.
Yeah, both. So anyway, we're talking about the three drinkers. But with Helena, you've also done some really lovely things for people during these lockdowns. You've been recording these life hacks for a calmer mind. How did you get to do that?
So that was a beautiful little project. It got to December, the end of December, and as we knew that there was another impending doom lockdown coming on. Now, we've both been quite upfront and open about how we have both faced anxiety through various different means and how we've both suffered from it in the past. And, you know, on my front, with having been diagnosed with Tourette's syndrome from the age of 7 and all the effects that that's had on me, I've had to create certain coping mechanisms in order to be able to reduce anxiety that I would get from the tics and just make myself feel calmer. So we both decided to put out a little teaser on social media to say that we were going to do a little series of videos, and we were just going to basically help people have a calmer and more collected 2021. And our friends over at McGuigan saw that, got in touch and said, look, can we help you push this further afield to help more people? Let us know what we can do to help. And so with backing from them, we were able to get this campaign quite far out there. And I'd like to say, based on the feedback it's had and the number of people who've gotten in touch, it's had quite a good impact. And, you know, we look at things like how light can affect your senses and your mood and anxiety, how green from trees, like the scientific properties within nature and how that can help you, how writing can be so therapeutic, what different sounds can do, and beyond just listening to meditation music, but there's so many different forms of sounds, scent and the impact that has, as we know, with wine. Different coping mechanisms you can utilize to make yourself happier, to improve your mood. Connecting with other people, the gut, breathing, CBD, but essentially 12 different topics, which we have 6-minute videos roughly for each one.
Yeah.
And it offers about 4 or 5 tips that you can instill within your life at home to be calmer, happier, and reduce your anxiety.
I love it. Honestly, just listening to your voice and listening to you just describe all these things, it's just made me take a really deep breath. I just feel really... really grounded. So, and I'm not even drinking any wine, which is normally my go-to. So thank you. But everyone, you put up those clips on the Three Drinkers website.
Exactly. Right? thethreedrinkers.com. And at the very top of the website, it just says life hacks for a calmer 2021.
And may it long continue. We need it. Yeah. So, do you know what? Let's cover. You have been an amazing ambassador, I think, in the wine industry for diversity, for the Black and Asian and minority ethnics, for people with conditions, as yourself, with Tourette's, and speaking openly about things. So, I've read that you believe Tourette's is your superpower, which is fantastic. Do you tell me a little bit more about that?
Absolutely. So people who suffer from Tourette's syndrome, we essentially have a surge of excess energy that goes into our tics. And for anyone who doesn't know what Tourette's syndrome is, it's vocal tics and mobile tics. So either something that is voice generated or something that is movement generated. Now, you've got to have 2 of each for a prolonged period of time in order to be diagnosed and have Tourette's syndrome. But there are so many different tic disorders in general out there. We all know a lot of kids, when they're younger, have a tic. Sometimes it sticks with them, sometimes it goes away. But I think, you know, what is really important is raising awareness on the fact that there's 300,000 people in the UK who have this, and 1 out of every 100 kids has this. Despite that, there's just 3 centres, specialist centres across the UK for people with it. And, you know, those numbers I'm talking about are the same numbers as those who suffer from autism in the UK as well. And so I think it's something that has been very much, not researched as much as it should do. And there's actually a petition with the government right now in order to try and get more money and more funding on the official Parliament petition website. And so if anyone's feeling that they've got 1 or 2 minutes to spare and want to help the Tourette community, they can just go to the Parliament petition website, type in Tourette and sign it. That'd be amazing. Thank you.
I certainly will.
but in general, thank you. So people with Tourette's have this excess energy that presents itself in the form of tics. And if we are able to foster that energy and re-divert it into something that we truly enjoy doing, then our tics don't exist in that moment. And we absolutely surge in terms of creativity and productivity. So when I put my love for what I do in terms of acting and the community-driven exercise I do and creating videos and, everything that encompasses the company that Helena and I have built, it really, really helps my tics calm down and just makes me an absolute, surge of energy and empowerment within that particular area. And, so that would be the superpower that I describe. In terms of diversity within the industry, I think that, it's something that is quite taboo for people to talk about because they feel like they're just window dressing. If they say, I have helped the BAME community, or I'm doing something for female empowerment, I'm doing something for LGBTQIA, or those with disabilities, a lot of people start to think, oh God, if I say that, then I'm just preaching and it looks like, but actually, if we don't start having those conversations, then nothing is going to change. Because if we have those conversations, more people will feel compelled to have them as well. And so it's like ripping the Band-Aid off. It's going to feel really uncomfortable, but we need to talk about it. And I'm going to be doing, I'm on a panel with Brown-Forman for one of their female empowerment groups as a female ally.
Okay.
And I'll be talking on this group about what it means to be a man and how we can help the female world. Because, if you look at it, females right now are told, you shouldn't go out after dark. It's too dangerous. Mm-hmm. Why? Why should it be dangerous? The problem isn't with the female going out. The problem is with the people who are creating the danger in the first mm-hmm. place. And it's education on that side of things that needs to be met mm-hmm. first. It's like saying to someone who's, part of the LGBTQIA community, you shouldn't go out after dark because if you wear colorful clothing or you wear makeup, it's dangerous. Yeah. But why? Why should it be mm-hmm. dangerous? So conversations need to be had. And I will always be there to have those difficult conversations to help spread that word so others feel confident to do so as well.
And you're not just doing that. You're also doing some mentorship as well. You're mentoring, is it Sara of The Pursuit of Greatness, who is a Black Asian wine communicator? And this has all kind of come down with a bit of help from Jancis Robinson, who's helped create a new website, the BAMEWineProfessionals.co.uk, for people to go and find more of our minority ethnics. And I think it's all really quite interesting that there's a little bit more of a focus. So what are you doing with this mentorship?
So that's going to be really exciting. We've not kicked it off just yet because this whole year has just been an explosion of so many different things for everyone. But very shortly, we will be discussing how and what we can do with that mentorship. I think at the very beginning of this year, you're quite right. And from what I was alluding to earlier, we have to start doing things rather than just talking about them. And one of the things that we have done in our podcast is have on, there's a trio of amazing guys. They're called the Glassmates. They're three Black dudes who are just so knowledgeable mm-hmm. about the world of spirits on this particular side. And we've had them into the podcast, 8 out of 10 episodes on the mm-hmm. last series to just discuss topics that are close to their heart. And in a similar vein, we're going to work with Sarah to see exactly what she wants to do and what she wants to get out of the wine world, and then use our platform to promote her and help in whatever way we can help her reach her goals. And, I think continuing onwards with this mission, I want to be able to do more for the LGBTQ community. I'm actively looking to people within our industry who have disabilities who we can, help foster and push out there a bit more.
Absolutely.
It's about people using their platforms to help other people.
Yeah, and absolutely. Just being more inclusive, looking to see who wants to get involved that perhaps doesn't feel like they can or maybe doesn't have a voice. I suppose it's our responsibility always to be looking to bring bright, intelligent, amazing, passionate minds, no matter who you are, where you are, what you look like. So it's exciting. And I think you should be very proud of yourself, the things that you're doing and putting in place, and hopefully motivating other people to follow, which I think is the most important thing.
Thank you. And thank you for promoting, you know, my disability and awareness around it by having me on as a guest as well. It's all little steps like this, which really help the bigger picture.
It is. The more we talk about these things, the more people feel more open to talk about these things rather than either being embarrassed or ashamed or feeling they might offend somebody's feelings. We need to openly say things with kindness, but with honesty and with integrity. And hopefully we can raise the vibration for everybody and just have an industry that's far more inclusive, right?
Amen. I say yes to that.
Amen, brother. So anybody who wants to listen to your podcast as well, let's point out they need to search. It's called Bring a Bottle.
That's the one. Bring a Bottle.
And then you can have a little listen to AD some more, which I'm sure you all will after listening to this one. Absolutely. So, okay. Now, you said that you got into the wine industry when you met your buddy from the other side of the pond in California, who was making wine in Silicon Valley. So is California a wine region that is close to your heart?
It absolutely is. And I think that there's a big stigma out there that the Californian wines people can get are all total price bombs. But there are so many different wines out there that are at that lower and mid tier that are just fantastic wines for people at all points of their journey and discovery. And, you know, I say no to the naysayers out there because there's a lot of people who, you know, just because you don't like a wine as an individual doesn't mean that someone else will not. And I think that, for example, Gallo get a hell of a lot of stick, but they are producing some fantastic wines at various different price points. And, you know, Apothic Cab is a fantastic wine, in my opinion, for getting people to buy something around £10 and figuring out, do you know what? This is a Cabernet Sauvignon from California. I like this. So I'm now going to go out there and explore a wine. You know, after I've had this one quite a bit, I'm going to go out there and find something for maybe £2 more expensive and see what else I can find. And then you get all the way to that £20. There's a wonderful cab called Slingshot that you can get. And, you know, just keep elevating that journey of discovery from all points of California. It's not just Napa.
Oh, definitely.
There's Sonoma, there's Paso Robles, there's Santa Barbara. There's, oh my gosh, so many different areas of California that you can...
I mentioned this to you already. I love the Central Coast, Paso Robles. Or just to point out, you said Paso Robles. I have only just started saying Paso Robles. I used to say Paso Robles.
Everyone does.
So apparently I looked this up. I was like, this should be, it should be Paso Robles. But of course, here I am, a British person trying to tell what Californian people to say Paso Robles. Apparently it was Spanish came there first and it was originally called, this town was called El Paso del Robles. And then it got shortened down to Paso Robles. But of course they call it Paso. Oh, okay. Now I've got confused. Paso. Wait. Paso Robles. Oh my God. Now I've said it too many times.
Roble Robles.
Oh my God, I've said it too many times. I've lost it. Paso Robles. Oh my God. Anyway, yeah. So now they call it Paso Robles. God, there we go. But apparently, if you find it confusing, you can just call it Paso.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. It's like everything else, isn't it? There's so many different terms in the wine world that people have absolutely no idea. It's like Burgoyne. Nah, just say Burgundy.
Find whatever is most simple. But going back to Paso, I have to say, Paso Robles, it's such an awesome region. Obviously, Cabernet Sauvignon still does really, really well there, but it's the Rhone varieties and stuff that I find super, super exciting. And then you mentioned Santa Barbara. I mean, down there, it's like one of the coolest part of California. The Pinots and the Chardonnays coming out of that region are fantastic. Again, people think of just Los Carneros or the Russian River or Sonoma. Basically Sonoma, Napa, and they're forgetting that further down south, there are such special wines to try. Although I have to say, I'm not very good at finding the cheaper wine. I'm glad you mentioned about some of the Gallo's wines because typically the wines that I think are really fantastic. In the UK, you can generally get them for about £20. So I still don't think they're super expensive, but I wouldn't say that they're just a quickly grab off the shelf, don't even think about it wines. I've got to say, if anyone is happy to pay the kind of £20 mark, Bonnie Doon, ugh, his wines.
Oh, yes.
I think my favourite Rhone Rangers, if I can think off the top of my head, Bonnie Doon, Alban. Again, he's not that cheap. Alban Vineyards is also fantastic. Oh, well, Tablas Creek.
Oof. Oh, yeah.
I think they probably would be my favourite three, which all of them, if you're not going for their top top wines around the £20 mark, you can get some really cracking stuff. That's for sure.
You absolutely can. There's Talbot as well. There's Cambria, which have a great Chardonnay and Pinot Noir. I tell you what I absolutely adore and what I think Paso Robles Robles and Santa Barbara have around the area. And, oh my gosh, San Luis Obispo.
Well,
so
in general, yes.
Paso and San Luis Obispo, they have, in my mind, the best Zinfandel in the world.
Ooh.
That is my favourite grape variety, Zinfandel. I fell in love with it.
Rather than Lodi?
Rather than Lodi. I really like the Paso Robles and the San Luis Obispo like variations and just whatever they're doing down there, whether it's the soil, whether it's the terroir, whether it's the climate, winemaking, whatever it might be, there is some phenomenal examples of Zinfandel over that way. And Turley, we are graced with having a few of the SKUs, a few of the bottles that Turley produce in the UK, Juvenile and Atlas Peak. Now, it's not the cheapest wine you're going to get, but to be able to, you know, it's not extortionately priced. I think it's fairly priced, but Zinfandel from Paso Robles and San Luis Obispo is out of this world.
It really is. What kind of price point roughly are they at? Because I think they're probably more hitting the £25-30 mark, aren't they?
Yeah, £30 for Turley Juvenile. Yes, that is a bit more expensive. But then, so what? Hold on, there is one. Okay, so there is another Zin. It's £24. It's called Bear Flag Zinfandel. Mm. And that is absolutely fantastic.
Where does that come from?
So I believe it is a blend of multiple different areas.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Oh, no, do you know what? No, I'm lying. It's from Sonoma.
Oh, dear. Okay, fine. So we've gone up slightly up north again. No, you're supposed to be staying in my central coast, which I think is exciting. No, but, you know, it's interesting. I have to say, I think you're right. Definitely Paso Robles, San Luis Obispo are making some cracking varieties. But I do think you can get some really good value in Lodi. They have such incredible old vines, and actually a lot of their wines I find for about £15. I know Klein Cellars, who I think are located in Sonoma, but they make a Lodi Zinfandel, and that's about £15. And also, just one of the first wines I ever encountered from California was the Brazen Old Vine Zinfandel, which they've done in Waitrose literally for 15 years. It's always been there and it's still there now. £15. And again, if people like that concentrated, kind of jammy, big, bold, luscious, a little bit raisin-like, a little bit chocolatey Zin, I mean, that one's a perfect one to go for and actually start the exploration of Zinfandel. But yes, if you can afford Turley, I used to sell that as a sommelier. I can definitely vouch for Turley. Yum.
And there's Gnarly Head, you have Zin as well, which is on that affordable stamp. I think it's about £12, I think.
Is it £12? You say, I think. Google it.
it's £18. Never mind.
Oh, well, you know, there we go. So you don't have to remortgage. But yeah, the thing is, a lot of the Californian wines, when you actually have a look online and you see them in America, they're so much cheaper, but they almost double in price.
Yeah, it's the export tax, isn't it? Which just makes it so much more expensive. I mean, there are definitely some that you can find within that cheaper standpoint, but you just got to look for them. Stone Barn does an okay job. You got Decoy as well.
Oh, Decoy,
yeah. They have some.
Yeah, I mean, again, not the cheapest, but Duckhorn as just a Californian producer are fantastic with all of their either blends or whether it's the Merlots, the Zinfandel or the single varietal Cab. Yeah, definitely look out for Duckhorn. And actually, I think what I like about Duckhorn is that they have such incredible quality and yet they're very well known, a good history, but they haven't kind of sold out to the price point. They haven't gone too expensive.
100%.
Where I think when people have been around for such a long time, the price just seem to keep on going up, but Duckhorn has maintained a certain level of integrity.
I'd say that's definitely true. And there's also, I mean, I know you were mentioning Lodi, Scotto family, they have a Zinfandel that I think is about £10, and that's pretty damn good. And Klein, you mentioned, I have to agree with you, they produce some phenomenal wines. And I remember that when I was working at the Garage East, I used to get a case of their wine. And then I go up to wine country in Sonoma or in Apple or wherever to case this wine. And the wineries were always extremely receptive to doing bottle swaps because they wanted to see what else was going on there in the world. So I'd take this case of wine up and then we'd do swapsies.
That's brilliant.
they'd say, all right, so what is the value of that wine? I'd tell them, you know, this is 20, 40, 50, whatever it was. Mm. And say, okay, here are three of ours. Which one do you want? And I'd go, I'll go for that one. And they also offer trade discount of up to, it's usually 20 to 50%. But, you know, if you get all pally with them, they give you 50. So I'd leave every time I went up with about six cases of wine, just kind of going up, talking the talk, doing my thing, spreading the love of wine. That was a good time. Yeah, I got very merry when I lived in San Francisco, I can tell you that.
Oh, I can imagine. It's interesting you were talking about California is not just Napa, and it really isn't. And I think the Pacific Coast, so I obviously work for a Chilean winery during the daytime, and that Pacific Coast is bloody freezing and really impacts the vineyards that are planted near the coast. And so it's the exact same thing up in California. And as an example, where we mentioned Santa Barbara, so I suppose it's worth pointing out where some of these are. So San Francisco is obviously in the middle part of California, and then going down all the way down to Los Angeles, you've basically got vineyards, and Santa Barbara is that lower part, right at the bottom, closest to Los Angeles. And it's the coldest. And that's because the coastal mountains, unusually, they don't go north to south, they go east to west. And so these freezing cold winds and fog and everything just come, hence why you can have these amazing Chardonnays and Pinots from down there, which apparently have the same amount of kind of acidity levels as Burgundy, which I think a lot of people probably just don't think of when they think of California. They think just warm and hot.
Mm-hmm. 100%. 100%.
I just wish more of it came to the UK, actually. As I said to you, I think for me, Paso Robles and Santa Maria Valley, these are the places that people should be exploring a little bit more, because I think you do get a slight better value just because also they haven't got the Napa name on there. But at the same time, they're doing a lot more interesting varieties. And the white Rhone varieties, Roussanne and Grenache Blanc.
Oh,
your reaction. Are you thirsty?
I am a bit thirsty. I'm looking at my wine shelf now in my bedroom. There's one in every room now. But yeah, I'm eyeing some things up here, that's for sure.
Did you visit many of the wineries down in the San Luis Obispo area or down in Santa Barbara?
I was only able to make two trips down there in the entirety of my time there, which is tragic. But, you know, I tried to explore as many other states as I possibly could. Mm. But I remember one called Tobin James, and they don't have wine over here, but it's quite readily available across the US. And it's essentially like an old cowboy shack. You go in, it's like an old saloon.
Yeah.
And you know, there's a piano in the middle, there's this bar going all around, they've got some massive giant format bottles. Uh-huh. And it's a very speakeasy vibe.
Oh, I love that.
And I have to say, you know, they did such a great job of making it such an inviting experience, and the wines are phenomenal. Again, San Luis Obispo and Paso Robles Zinfandel. Wow.
I think we're doing a good job promoting this area. I think people are going to go and investigate after this, right?
I hope so. And I think that, you know, there's support some of the smaller online retailers and the independents that are out there for this as well, because I know that a lot of the big retailers will have those staple Sonoma Napa wines, but it's the smaller peeps who have gone out there and explored the nooks and crannies of these regions and brought some real treats over. And, you know, if you like Californian wines, it's definitely worth spending a couple of extra pounds to experience something off the beaten track.
Well, it's funny, actually, I think as well, just I'm going back to Pinot Noir because, you know, it's a classic. But to kind of also showcase how good this area is that people often don't know about. Have you seen Somme 3?
Not yet, but I can't wait to. Mm. And I need to very soon. Mm.
So in Somme 3, it was really cool. So just like the Judgment of Paris of 1976, they kind of decided to create another like blind tasting, but this time with Pinot Noir instead of Chardonnay. And so they did a whole load of different Pinots, and there were obviously mostly lots of Burgundies thrown in there, but a few others. In first place, I'm ruining it for you now, but still to prove a point, first place was was a Volnay. It was Marcus d'Angerville. So it was very much like, yeah, okay, cool. Yeah, that makes sense. This came in first place in the blind tasting. But in second place was the Bloomsfield Domaine de la Côte, which is made by the sommelier turned winemaker Raj Parr. And it was just, I think that's another amazing feat for Californian wines. And especially this wine is from the Santa Rita Hills, which is a smaller AVA within the Santa Barbara County. And it just goes to show, okay, This came in second place and beating other top Burgundian wines. And it keeps on happening. You know, if we keep on doing these kind of blind tastings of certain areas in the New World versus the traditional, you know, your Bordeaux and your Burgundy, people will start realizing that some of the best wines in the world are coming from outside of France these days. So we can't all afford that wine, though, unfortunately. I'm not sure how much that is, but it's not it's not an everyday wine.
I think that, you know, what's really exciting is, much like you said before, the judgment in Paris, and how before no one thought of California as a place of producing wine. You know, there's areas like in Switzerland where they drink 95% or more of the wines over there, and we get such a small fraction of it delivered over to the UK. But what we do find is incredible, and it's similar to these regions because these wines are so amazing. They get bought up by the local areas straight away, and it only after, you know, several years, when they can expand that distribution a bit but keep the quality and maintain it, do we start finding it over here because of specialist importers, much like the wonderful Stephen Spurrier did in Paris, importing very small quantities of these amazing wines. You know, God rest his soul.
Absolutely.
And it's that mentality that hopefully we can keep seeing that, and that will support and promote more wines from these smaller and lesser well-known but still exceptional quality areas of California.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I have to say, the chances of most people just getting their hands on the Bloomsfield Domaine de la Côte is quite hard, but they do a different project, the Sandy project, where you get some Pinot Noirs and Chardonnays at a much more affordable price. They kind of buy in some fruits and stuff, but one of their wines is from the Sanford and Benedict Vineyard, which are some pretty old Pinot. I think it's the oldest Pinot in the Santa Rita Hills. Ooh. And so, yeah, you can actually get them slightly more affordable Pinot from there, should anybody want to actually kind of taste some of wines from Rajpar and you can't quite afford the Bloomsfield. There are options. I think that's the nice thing, to find out the producers that are doing side projects or doing their second level. If you find a good producer, you don't need to always get their top wine. And actually, we mentioned Bonnie Doone. His major wine, Le Cigar Volant, I think it's called Le Cigar Volant, typically it was selling for about £50. It was, a Rhone blend. And then he decided, I think this is really interesting, he's such a quirky winemaker, he kind of decided, do you know what? We've had a time and a place for this. It's a wine that needs to be held back before it can be enjoyed. It's a really intense wine. It's very, very powerful. That's not what people want these days. And so he's, since the 2018 vintage, that it still exists, but it's like a new wine, still Rhone varietals, but instead of like the Mourvèdre, he's putting in, I think, Sanso. And I've seen that wine, so it's kind of same name, are selling for just over £20. So a much more approachable, younger, more youthful, more fun version. So ironically, he's changed his big, strong, powerful main wine to something much more young and fun and affordable, which is quite interesting.
We love that. It means more people can get their hands in it. So we like that.
Yeah, absolutely. So anyway, it's about finding those kind of producers that are either making changes or doing lower levels. But check out Central Coast. And also, actually, I say Central Coast, you talk about the Silicon Valley, but just to the east of Silicon Valley is the Livermore Valley.
Yeah. And isn't that where Wente is? Are they over in Livermore?
They are. And they are, I think this is quite cool, and they're not too expensive. They're standard Chardonnay, obviously not their top stuff. 80% of all Chardonnay in California is the Wente clone, which they brought across from France. So they brought it across. And now, 80% of all of the Chardonnays in California are the Wente clone. In fact, in the Livermore Valley, I don't know if they're using it or not. They also, the Sauvignon Blanc does really, really well in Livermore, very gravelly soils. It's a region that's not as well known. So I think the pricing is a little bit better. And the Sauvignon Blanc clones came over maybe around the same time, definitely in the 1800s, from Chateau de Caen.
Chateau de Caen.
Yes, absolutely. It's quite cool when you start seeing the connections and then you go, okay, yeah, do you know what? Fine, I'm going to start investigating wines from that region. It's very, very cool. But I have to say, I haven't had any Sauvignon Blanc from Livermore ever, only Chardonnay. So I actually cannot personally say what I think of it. Have you had Sauvignon Blanc from Livermore Valley?
Do you know what? I cannot remember. I'm sure at some point on my journey there, I did. And I'm sure it was absolutely amazing. But at this point in time, after having had so many bottles of wine in my lifetime, I do not remember.
It happens, doesn't it? The drinking. Well, if anybody as well, if you go onto the other side, so this is why I'm like, definitely explore Central Coast, because I think a lot of people probably have heard of some of the names, but they don't realise where it is. The Santa Cruz Mountains, as the mountains would probably suggest, we're talking kind of up to 800 metres, and that's where the Ridge Montebello comes from, which I have to say, in terms of a Cabernet Sauvignon, that actually really is, it's kind of savoury and it has that slight earthiness and cigar box. It's not just, it's nowhere near like juicy, big, black, bold Cabernet Sauvignon. It really can stand up against the top Bordeaux of the world. Ridge Montebello is there. So, I mean, if anyone's got some cash to drop... I would definitely recommend going there.
And if you want to go the opposite direction, all the way down to the very bottom, the Temecula Valley or Temecula Valley. Oh. I can't exactly remember which one it is now.
Yeah.
How it's pronounced, but there are 50 wineries down there now.
Since when?
A quickly growing region. Since right now, there's 50 wineries in Temecula or Temecula Valley.
To be honest, I cannot keep up with that whole area. I mean, just west of Santa Rita Hills is a region that's not got an AVA, but they're calling it like the wine ghetto. I think they're calling it the Lompoc Highlands. Like, they're doing lots of experimenting and they've got like this industrial space, and where these people are making wines, it's the wine ghetto. So quite clearly, we all need to get really, really far down south in California, because it sounds to me like there's some pretty exciting stuff going on down there.
It does. I'm definitely going to be doing a bit more searching this evening as well, and getting another bottle or two added to the collection, I think.
Oh, me too. So anyway, hopefully that has kind of inspired people listening that California is far more than just Cabernet Sauvignon and far more than Napa Valley. I mean, we've only just touched the surface. Maybe I'll get a little bit more wine geeky soon about the Californian wine region so people can understand. But thank you so much, AD.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me. This has been a wonderful hour of my life, I have to say.
Oh,
a lot of fun.
I appreciate it. Now, probably you can get back to your, and I think you are the one that name it this way, your shitty latte art.
My shitty latte art, yes. The hopeless art of attempting to create lattes using a latte machine. I'm getting better, but you know, I don't want to become an expert. I think it's quite funny how I fail nearly every single day.
I have to agree with you. Yeah, I laugh. They bring me joy seeing your creations, and they are creative, but artistic perhaps not.
I'll take that. Again, as I said at the beginning, as long as it puts a smile on people's face.
Oh, that's all we need to do. Well, hopefully everyone listening, you'll have smiled a little bit. AD, I shall leave you to do whatever you need to do to be happy today. And we'll speak a little bit later on.
Thank you. And chin chin.
Chin chin to you. So I hope after that chat, you feel a little bit more like exploring some new regions in the Central Coast. If you want to know a little bit more about Paso Robles, go across to patreon.com/eatsleepwinerepeat, where I've done a little focus episode, because I do have a little bit of a soft spot for that AVA. But for now, I shall end this episode, as I always do, with a wine quote from Benjamin Franklin. Now, when he was writing a letter to a friend, he said, "Behold the rain which descends from heaven upon our vineyards. There it enters the roots of the vines to be changed into wine, a constant proof that God loves us and loves to see us happy." It seems rather apt when this episode does have a bit of a focus on being happy. So to all of you, thank you for listening. Hopefully this episode has put a smile on your face and your hand reaching for a glass of Californian wine. Please do like, share, and subscribe this podcast if you haven't already, and leave me a review if you find yourself a moment spare. Have a great week, and guys, cheers to you.